Welcome to the Ripple Fishing Report. I'm your host, Brad Long. Hey, everybody. I'm glad you made it in. This is our 20th episode of 2020. So that's a lot of 20s. And hopefully this episode can be a little better off than the year of 2020 has been so far. So let's not use that as a gauge. But it is our 20th episode, and I find that very hard to believe because, you know, it feels like just, you know, last week we started doing this podcast. But then I look back over the information that's been shared and all the things that have come together over the last 20 episodes, and really it's just a tremendous amount of information, scientific information, geographical information, just information that's dead on about the areas that we cover. So, you know, I hope you've been enjoying it, and I certainly have enjoyed hosting it and kind of learning all of this stuff with you. So, you know, it's a special episode. But, you know, I got to be honest, the fishing has not been spectacular over the last week, and it's more related to the weather. The weather has not been spectacular. I know I was able to get out down in Panama City over this past weekend, and if you spend any time out over the weekend, you probably experienced the same thing I did, which was we put some fish in the boat. So it's not that we just, you know, got skunked or anything, but it was difficult. And that's okay. You know, we dodged some raindrops and some storms that kind of steadily blew through the area. And you know, we kind of played with the excessively high tide that I think is a result of Hurricane Hannah that made landfall over in Corpus Christi, Texas. And I think that some of the things that were occurring were a result of the hurricane. And what I mean is, you know, I'm assuming there's probably some pressure changes and some things that affected the fish and the water, in the waterways that, you know, I didn't really account for, and frankly wouldn't have noticed had I not been out fishing. It wasn't excessively windy. It really wasn't even all that stormy, just kind of wet and nasty and pretty hard rain. And of course, you know, in Florida, when there's rain, there's thunder and lightning that kind of come with it most of the time. So you have to keep kind of one eye on the horizon, so to speak, to make sure you don't get pinched. Luckily, we didn't really get caught in anything, but, you know, it just made for an interesting day. You couldn't really just tear out of there and go to the areas that you might want to try to fish. So that's okay. That's fishing. That's why we keep going back, is because it's a challenge, and we learn something new. And, you know, sometimes the circumstances around our day don't make for the best day, but you know, it's an experience, and it's part of the deal. So I don't mind it. I just like getting out there. So it's a good time doing that. But this week we're going to talk to Captain Brandt over in Pensacola. Captain Brandt has had some boat problems. We'll get into that a little bit, and he's been land based, and so he's got some great information. Kind of shake things up a little bit and talk about the land-based fishing in the Pensacola area. So he shares some awesome information on that. We're going to hear from Captain Lionel James over in Destin. Captain Lionel played it smart, and he hasn't spent a tremendous amount of time on the water because of the weather. He was able to get out some, and so he talks about that. And we talk a little bit about boat maintenance and some of the things that he does and some of the recommendations he has. So just kind of a general fishing conversation, let's say. And Captain Justin just got back from vacation and tells us a little bit about his trip. And of course, it was a fishing vacation, which is funny to me. But he was able to do some fishing out west, and so we talked to him about that. And then we talk a little bit about kind of how to handle some of this strange weather and some of the electronics that benefit fishing in this strange weather that you can use to your advantage. And he's an expert in that stuff. And so, you know, we're going to just talk to all three of the guides and find out kind of what they do when the weather sucks, you know, when the weather's weird and you still want to get out, or that's just the only day you can get out. Or, you know, like in my case, you know, we had a weekend plan for some time, and, you know, we were going fishing, didn't matter. And that's what we did. And sometimes you kind of pay the price when you have to take on that mentality, but that's okay, because, you know, it's one of those things that, if you're like me and you just like getting out there, then that's what you do. You just get out there. And so that's what we did. But let's just hop right in, talk to Captain Brandt. Hey, Captain Brandt, how you doing?
Hey, doing well.
Awesome, man. So you've been able to get out and fish a little bit despite the weird weather over the weekend, huh?
Yeah, it's been kind of crazy, and I'm landlocked right now. Somebody ran into my boat at the marina, and so it's in the shop for the next 3 to 4 weeks, and so I've been land based fishing.
Oh, okay. So, how in the world did somebody run into your boat with enough velocity at a marina?
Interesting, man. It was one of those weekends where there was just so much boat traffic, and my boat was tied up, and I think someone was coming in trying to park and was supposed to put it in reverse, and they accidentally floored it into forward, and it ran right over the top of my boat.
Oh, wow. Was it a big boat that hit you?
It was a lot bigger than my boat.
That's always the case, isn't it?
Just, yeah, exactly.
Well, I hate that, man. So I guess you got to get some fiberglass repair, huh?
Yeah, I'm getting that done right now. Potential motor damage, we're not sure yet, but I'm definitely in the middle of the fiberglass work.
Yeah, so the motor thing, is that good news? Like, yay, I get a new motor, or?
We don't know. We'll see. I mean, it would technically potentially be good news, I guess.
Yeah.
We'll just kind of see how it plays out.
Hey, I tell you something, man. I had a couple years ago, my trolling motor, it was the original, so it's one of those old school, you know, bow mount handheld deals. And it worked fine, but it wasn't attached that well. And I didn't pay that. Yeah, I mean, you know, it didn't like bounce around or anything. But anyway, we hit a good a rough day, and we're crossing the bay, and that joker just popped off and landed in the water in like 30 feet of water. And by the time it happened, it's like, well, there it goes. But the good news, I was upset at first, but the good news is I ended up getting this brand new iPilot and all this for like the cost of my deductible. So,
sure.
You know, it's like, hey, it's an inconvenience, but I came out ahead, you know.
Absolutely. And you can definitely come out ahead, and we'll see. I mean, maybe there's nothing wrong with it, but it's the motors, the cowling is all busted up and stuff. So we'll see.
Anyway, that's maybe, you know, if you got to go through this, maybe at least you get a new motor out of it, right?
Exactly. I would love that.
That's what I would be thinking. That's why I said good news or bad news, because it's not all bad, you know?
Exactly.
Well, cool. So you've been land-based. So that's a good thing for the purposes of the podcast, though, because I think there's a lot of listeners that are also land-based or kayak-based or whatever. So how have you been approaching that?
So it's interesting, and I used to do a lot of land-based stuff, but obviously in the last 7 or 8 years, it's been all boat stuff. But it's definitely more challenging this time of year.
Yeah.
You know, just to kind of find I think the first day I went to the jetties in Perdido Pass.
Okay.
Just because there's been a bunch of big bluefish there.
Okay.
And caught some blues, tons of skipjacks there, and then I caught a handful of nice Spanish, and so there's fish to be caught there. It was, pretty hot and heavy action there for a little while.
Yeah. You get a nice school of those ladyfish blow through, man. They'll keep you busy.
Yeah, and especially being landlocked like that. If you're landlocked just looking for something to do, hit up the jetties in Perdido Pass, and you're going to have some action.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. We were able to get out this over the weekend, and that's why I mentioned the crappy weather, because it was everywhere in the panhandle, or at least in and out. And we ran into some of those ladyfish. And you know, if it's a slow day, and there were some slow periods for sure there over the weekend. And
absolutely,
it was that's the toughest fishing I've had in a while. I got to be honest. I'm going to blame this Hurricane Hannah that made landfall in Texas.
Sure.
But I don't know if that had anything to do. I know that the tide was insanely high. And so I'm like, there's an effect that's come all the way over here. I just don't know that for sure. But I don't know. It wasn't right. But we caught a few of those kind of here and there, and it kind of kept us busy when they would show up, you know.
Yep, exactly.
And I tell you something else. I mean, even land-based, but I've caught some on the fly rod before off the beach, and those are a lot of fun. On a fly rod.
They're a blast. They absolutely are. And they also make phenomenal cut bait when you're land based fishing. And so what I always do is when I catch a ladyfish, I cut him up and I'll put him on a big rod and just stick it in a sand spike just to keep it there to maybe catch a bull red or a shark or something like that.
Yeah. I've heard that, and you know, they're kind of a nasty fish in terms of bringing them in a boat. They're slimy and bloody and oily, and they're just nasty. So it makes sense they would make good cut bait.
Yep, absolutely.
They have a weird odor. you know.
Mm-hmm. They do.
But so cut bait is always a good choice for anything land-based. Do you ever get on the piers, or is it just too crowded?
You know, it's too crowded for me. My dad is a big pier fisherman, and he goes out there every – he's out there right now on Okaloosa Pier. And, man, they're still seeing lots of tarpon come through, catching some kings in Spanish. I'll probably make it out there. I usually get out there like once a year.
Yeah. So they are seeing tarpon, though, come through now.
Yeah, every day. Every day. They hung several yesterday. And I think I've hung some today.
Okay. Well, last time we talked, it had kind of slacked up a little bit, so it sounds mm-hmm. like it came back.
Yeah, they're seeing them. They're not biting that well, but they're seeing quite a few.
Yeah. Well, that's half the battle with those guys is getting them to show up when you need them, you know?
Yep, absolutely.
So the jetties are always a safe win for in any, you know, Pensacola or mm-hmm. Destin or even or Panama City. That those are always good spots, just the structure and the channels.
Yeah,
and, you know.
And you're right there. You've got a lot of moving water. It usually drops off fairly deep at jetties, holds a lot of bait. Its structure, there's just everything combined there that makes it a pretty solid ambush spot.
Yeah, and, you know, that makes sense why you were catching things like bluefish and the mm-hmm. the ladyfish there, because that's, I mean, if you see bait, you're definitely going to see the one of those two, if not both, usually.
Absolutely.
So you said big bluefish. What is a big bluefish? Like, what size are we talking?
So a big bluefish is obviously for around here is nothing compared to a big bluefish on the East Coast
right.
of the United States. And so on the East Coast, they catch, I mean, man, they catch like, I think 15, 20 pounders, like giant bluefish
wow.
over there. Yeah. But here, I mean, man, if you get a good 17 to 20 incher, that's a good blue.
Yeah. So what are they on the East Coast anyway? Cause I never realized they got that big.
But yeah, they do.
Do people eat them or just catch them or what? Like, is it kind of like a Jack Crevel or is there more to them?
Yeah, man. So they actually love them on the East Coast. And it's one of those fish that I think you have to eat like same day you catch it kind of deal.
Yeah.
But, man, they're actually pretty decent. I've eaten them several times over here. I don't know about the real big ones, but I've eaten them several times over here. And they're not that bad. They really aren't.
Yeah. Huh. Well, that's good to know. And I was asking because I've seen, I just kind of look through every now and then the regulations and bluefish have, is there a size and a quantity? Am I remembering right?
Yeah. So here they have to be like 12 inches long and I can't remember how many you can keep. It may be unlimited. I'm
yeah.
not sure, but, man, you know, here though, like I said, if you get, most of the bluefish here are like 12 to 14 inches. They're not that big. But if you sometimes can get in the 18 to 22, 23 inch long fish, those are decently hard fighting fish.
Oh, know? Yeah. Yeah. The little ones are, I mean, they're surprisingly, they're super aggressive, which is always nice. And mm-hmm. and they seem to have a pretty decent fight in them for their size, you know.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
But so I'm glad you cleared that up because I saw that and I thought, well, what are people doing with these bluefish that I don't know about, you know, because obviously somebody.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I wondered. I said, maybe it's cut bait or live bait or something that I just don't, you know, I just haven't done that. But so I'm glad you cleared it up a little bit. So people use the smaller ones for bait, you were saying?
Yeah, they do. And they eat them. Like I watched a video of a guy, a YouTuber from Alabama the other day that ate one and they really enjoyed it. And
yeah.
I've eaten them myself and they're not bad. They really aren't.
Huh. Well, maybe something to try then, especially
you need to bleed them. You got to bleed them. Though.
Okay. Yeah. A lot of that stuff that has a big question mark over the table quality. It, mm-hmm. you always, bleeding them always kind of makes them better. It seems like.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you fish the jetties. Have you fished off the beach any?
Yeah, a little bit. I fished actually this morning. I fished a beach that was in a bayou in Pensacola. There's a nice little beach in Bayou Grande in Pensacola, and I caught a land-based. I caught probably a 30-pound black drum.
Wow. I saw that picture.
Yeah, kind of cool to catch one off the beach like that on land, you know,
yeah.
in a bayou and caught some caught some. There's some mangroves, lots of mangrove snappers around right now in the bay. Anywhere you can find structure, I'm seeing mangrove snappers right now.
And what's the way you found to target those? Live shrimp, pinfish, something like that?
Yeah, the mangroves.
Yeah.
Live shrimp, just about, or a little live, like white bait, or what they call a whatever, pilchard, a LY, a little small LY works great.
Okay. I had intentions to target mangrove snapper a little bit if the weather kind of cooperated in the right way, and it never really did. And so we didn't even – I mean, I guess we put out baits that could have caught them, but that's we sure. were just sort of putting out some pinfish that hoping to get anything. And
I saw a bunch of them today, and I didn't really have the right baits for them, and I will probably target those on the next calm day that we have.
Yeah. I've never eaten a mangrove snapper, and I hear they're fantastic.
Yeah, I like them better than a red snapper.
That's what everyone says, and so I thought, you know, while I'm down here, I need to try to pick up a couple and just see what this is all about, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I had no luck, so, you know. But
yeah, they're finicky, man. You got to go light line, light everything, sometimes even bury the hook if you can.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we were down in the Keys on a tarpon trip one time, and my wife tagged along, and she had commented of, I don't know how your significant others are in the fishing world, but my wife is not as involved in it as I am. Let's just say that.
That's about mine.
Yeah. Yeah. So she says, well, I want to catch something we can eat, and I'm thinking we're down here to fly fish for tarpon. I don't care at all about anything to catch and cook kind of deal, you know.
Sure.
but she's there, and she said that. So of course the guide is a great dude, and so he's like, well, there I know a spot, there's always mangrove snapper there, we'll let you catch some of those on this fly rod and it'll be fun, you'll be able to do it. So we go there, you could see them everywhere, and they would not touch anything, to the point that he started trying to catch them just because, like, am I crazy that they're not eating this? He's like, we catch these every time we come here, and they wouldn't touch it.
Yeah, so that's typical mangrove.
Yeah, I've experienced that where you're looking at them saying, here's the fly, here's mm-hmm. you know, there you are, come on, and they just go the other way, and then they come back.
Typical.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I've had an experience with those things being finicky.
That's funny.
Yeah. So so what do you see, and I really like the way you kind of created this, but last week you told us, if I were taking clients out tomorrow, here's what I would do.
Sure.
So that's my question. If you were taking clients out tomorrow, where would you take them fishing?
Gotcha. Yeah. So it's probably going to be a little rough right now, off the beach. It is looking like it's going to calm down. So if I could get it's going to be a solid 2-foot seas the rest of the week. So if you don't mind braving the rough water, I would go just outside, and hit some of the near shore wrecks. There's lots of mackerel right now, kings and Spanish. You can have a lot of action out there. And before all the hurricane and stuff, there was cobia. So they may still be hanging around because nobody has gotten to hit those. And so that's exactly what I would probably do. And if it was too rough to go out there, I would probably hit any structure in the bay right now, from jetties to bridges to rock piles, whatever you can find. And I think you could easily catch a limit of mangrove snappers, just because I'm seeing that many of them around. And all the while I'm looking for fish busting the top of the water, like your bluefish and your Spanish and ladyfish, because that's just another way to keep you busy while you're looking for those other fish. So
right. Well, that's awesome, man. And that's great advice. So if you're heading to Pensacola, there you go. There's your trip for the next few days that you can put some fish in the boat with, or at least have some action. So
absolutely.
Awesome. Well, tell us how to find you on YouTube and in your website.
Yeah, so you can just find me at Angler Up with Brant on YouTube. I post videos every couple of days, and then my website, CaptainBrant.com.
Awesome. Well, man, good luck with your boat. I know that's a headache, I think, is a way to term
sure.
that. And so I hope they can get it back the way it was, because I know that's always my fear with fiberglass work, Is it going to be a forever problem now that it's happened?
Yeah, we'll see, man. Maybe there's a silver lining in it.
Yeah, I hope so, man. Well, thanks for talking with us, and hopefully we can get some more land-based information from you over the next week or two, and that's just even better.
Sure.
You know, mix it up.
Absolutely, Brad. Thanks, man.
Thank you for that update, Captain Brandt. And, you know, it sounds like the bite in Pensacola hasn't been affected quite as much as I experienced over in Panama City. But, you know, the thing is, it's, you know, I'm not a pro. I don't do this every day. So some of these guys are able to still put fish in the boat no matter what. And Brandt's one of those guys. So that's, you know, that's just part of it. But, you know, it's interesting. I don't wish the boat issues on anybody. But if you do have an issue like come up like Brant's had, you know, maybe you get lucky and you get a new outboard out of it. I mean, that would be nice, right? Silver lining for sure. But I am interested in hearing more about the land-based options in the Pensacola area over the next few weeks, because there's so many people that come down and they either don't have a boat or they travel from too far to bring their boat. And it'll be nice to hear about those options that they can still explore while they're in the area and still catch some fish. And so Brant's going to help us out with that. So I'm actually excited. Not so much about Brant's misfortune with the boat, but just the idea that we can kind of explore something a little bit different and a little bit new for us. So I'm looking forward to that. Up next, we're going to talk to Captain Lionel James over in Destin, Florida. And Captain Lionel has kind of limited the amount he's been able to get out, or he didn't do it. Let me rephrase. The weather forced him to limit the amount he was able to get out and fish, but he got out a little bit, and we're going to talk a little bit about some things you can sort of accomplish while you're rained out, so to speak. You know, boat maintenance and some things that you should sort of incorporate into that downtime that you have, you know, where you have a week or several days of it just being too rough to really get out and accomplish much. You're able to still accomplish some things that need to be done, that you certainly don't want to pick the pretty days that are nice and flat to sit at home and tinker on the boat to get it running the way it's supposed to. So, you know, it's a good time to take advantage of some of that. So let's just hop right in and hear from Captain Lionel over in Destin. Captain Lionel, how you been?
Not too bad, man. I wish it would stop raining, man. Are y'all getting a bunch of rain up there?
Yeah, man. It's been raining on and off pretty much every day. And today's been, there's been a ton of rain, like, in the middle of the week, you know?
Right, right.
But how about you? It's I'm sure it's even worse down there.
It's about the same, man. You know, what's crazy about right now, there is a lot of rain, but the forecast seems to be changing every 45 minutes. It'd be 90% chance of rain and 20% of the night. So it's been really hard to, like, predict and run some trips this week. However, I did do a couple, and it's been a learning curve. You know what I mean?
Well, I was out this past weekend, and there was a learning curve there too. So that's a good topic and a good rabbit hole for us to go down, maybe.
Absolutely.
So what did you learn this week that's weather-oriented to the fish?
You know, man, with just a lot of rain, and it's happened before, but it just felt like and you said you went fishing this weekend too. You know, I just felt like with the storms, and even a storm so far west affecting the bite this far east, and what I'm talking about is Texas, you know?
Yeah.
It was a really, really slow, and I fish a lot of reefs, you know what I mean? And it was really hard to pick up a bite there. I just felt like the fish or the pressure did something to them.
I agree.
To just kind of shut everything down, man. And that happens. That happens quite a bit, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know what I experienced. I fished out of Panama City. But I'm sure if it was there, it was in Destin and in Pensacola and everywhere. But when I pulled out of the marina, I happened to notice that the water was touching the bottom of the docks. That normally doesn't happen. So it was an excessively high tide.
Right.
Which was interesting because, I, and when you and I spoke last week, it wasn't really supposed to be like a major tide, but that doesn't take into account the storm that's kind of messing things up.
Right, all the extra water that comes in, yeah.
Yeah, so you have all that fresh water between all the rain and stuff, and then you have these crazy tides that affect us all the way over here when this thing's happening in Corpus Christi, Texas, you know?
Right, right.
And so I'm like, well, that has to be it, you know, because I had a really – I mean, we caught fish, but it was super slow. And,
right.
And it was areas that we always, you know, bull reds at the bridge. I mean, just sort of common knowledge type things. And there were other people fishing there, and nobody was hooking up, us included, you know.
Right. Fish there, but you couldn't get a bite, right?
No.
Or you,
I mean, there's bait everywhere. There's current coming through. You know, it's just odd. And I'm with you. I think it just all goes back to whatever weird barometric thing happens.
Plays into that.
Yeah, and we don't feel it, but they do, and then they react, you know.
Right, right, right. So, I mean, it was tough. I had one trip that we did find some redfish on the beach, and we caught a couple out of there, but it was so rough that it was really hard for me to position the boat and get close enough to make the cast. So it was a really patient thing, and same thing, man. It was a nice school of fish, but we're plucking one here and there, you know, when it should be, you know, four or five or six throughout that school, you know. So it was a tough weekend, man, but I think weekends like this are important because it resets everything, gives Mother Nature a chance to bring some new fish in, and, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, it keeps us fishermen humble, too. So that's always a good thing. We don't need to think we got it all dialed in.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it did that for us. But you know what I found strange, and maybe you can comment on it. So here was our logic. We went to some water that was some skinny water, and to be honest, there was a storm kind of coming. It's like, well, we got about an hour. So we went, and actually in that 1 hour, we caught 8 trout on this flat. Okay. So I'm like, hey, this is not so bad.
That's a good day.
Yeah. First, you know, we get out the first little trip out. Well, then this storm gets closer and we realize it's an actual storm. So we're like, well, we don't need to try to sit around and wait through this. So we went back to the marina, did some other stuff, and it rained really hard for maybe an hour or two.
Okay.
Now, I thought, I don't mean the way this is going to come across, but the way I understood things was that when you have a hard rain like that in the middle of these dog days of summer, it's going to cool that flat off and some of the fish are going to come in shallower to feed and stuff, right? Justin and I just spoke about all this like a week or two ago. And I was like, well, this is actually perfect. So if we had that kind of success before this storm, once that water gets cooled off, man, we're going to go back to that same area and just destroy them, right?
Right.
We went back after the rain, and we caught 2 fish. And I'm like,
a lot of fresh water that comes in there, you know?
Like, it's like this defeats all logic that I'm applying to this situation. Like, this is not what should be happening. It was just so strange.
I think what happens is, like, you know, you get that layer of fresh water. It pushes some of the bait out. But, I mean, because there's still a fine line and mixture between fresh and salt, brackish, and where these fish still need a little bit of salt. So
sure,
you get all that fresh water dumped into there, it pushes some fish off into some deeper water, you know.
Yeah, I mean, so that could be it was just so weird. Yeah. I mean, I was telling my buddy, I'm like, oh yeah, this rain's gonna come through, man, and it's gonna be on once we can get back over there. And and what was so strange with, you know, the storm coming in, it was remarkably calm after that. After that storm, the sun came out, it was slick calm, there was no wind. I mean, it was just, and it was like 75 degrees because it had just rained.
It cooled off,
perfect, man.
Yeah.
Except the fish weren't biting. So it's like, everything's great, except the one thing we're here for. But
absolutely,
that's just the way it goes. And to be honest with you, I've been with all the things in the news media these days. I don't watch it very often, so I didn't even know there was a hurricane out there. I had no idea. People were telling me, "Oh, you're going fishing. Well, be careful. The weather, you know." And I'm like, it's summer. Yeah, I mean,
my dad told me, man. So I'm right there with you, dude.
I'm better off avoiding all that and just kind of forming my own opinions, I guess.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
But that completely caught me off guard. And then, to be honest, when I heard about it, I'm like, well, that's in Texas, you know. But there was a little bit of blowback that kicked into the panhandle, I guess.
Absolutely, it was pretty wavy, man. Pretty wavy.
Yep. So I guess you know, since we spoke last, so you know, last week and over the weekend, you were able to get out a little bit, and it sounds, I mean, obviously we've talked about it, but when it's rough like that and nobody's comfortable, the fish aren't comfortable, it's just going to – nothing's going to cooperate.
Right.
Have you heard any kind of reports, like off the piers or off people beach fishing or anybody that's been able to do anything?
I haven't talked to too many people. My whole crew, we all stayed inside and kept it safe.
Yeah.
And we moved a lot of trips around. As far as the pier, I didn't actually honestly keep an eye on that. Just this week has been kind of like an adulting week, trying to get my house together and all that stuff too. So
we got to have those, man. We got to be adults sometimes, you know.
Yeah, and getting that all ready, and then, you know, I think I'm this maintenance with the boat and just get ready for this last little home stretch. Hopefully,
yeah,
you know, it's from August to the end of October. It's at least, you know, some good weather that I can make this last little run of the season. And you know, September and October are definitely one of my favorite months because it's time it cools down and redfish start to get in bigger schools because they're starting to breed in September and October. So I'm just really looking forward to that now. I'm not really looking for the cool part because I don't like cold weather.
I'm with you.
But just getting ready for that last little stretch because it's almost over, man, you know?
I know, man. And you know what's crazy, man, is that this podcast began like in the very beginning, like we're like waiting for it to warm up and like, what's the temperature? Right. How's it looking? And now here we are kind of on the downhill side of the summer, you know, and talking about the fall, and it feels surreal to even be doing that right now.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And then, I don't know how the listeners feel, but I have kids that are going back to school and all those choices are presenting themselves, and it's just a,
Absolutely.
I'll just leave that there. Who knows? Yeah. So let me ask you, you have, what size is your boat?
I have a 26 foot.
Okay. And what, is it a Pathfinder?
It is a Pathfinder.
Okay. That's a nice boat, man.
Thank you. So, I worked very, very hard for that.
Yeah. So what, and you have a tower, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So what kind of maintenance do you do on it during, like, and I'm asking selfishly for me, like middle of the season, you get a break kind of like this, weather related, well, whatever. What are you doing?
I always take my boat every, like, I try to make it on the dot 100 hours. I take it to Ships Channel to have the 100 hour service.
Okay.
There is this spray that Yamaha makes that I also, it's like a cleaner and a protectant that you can spray all over your engine. Let me just grab it real quick so I know the exact name of it. But I spray that on the engine once a week, and it just stops corrosion. I mean, you can use it liberally, and just spray it everywhere you can on the interior engine.
Yeah,
you know, take off the top of your cowling, and it's called Yama Shield.
Okay,
and check it out, man. It is actually it's rust, corrosion protection, and all that from your salt water. And my engine's fairly, I guess you could say, fairly old-ish.
Yeah.
And it still looks like new when you take the cowlings off, you know?
Yeah. I bet it's not as old as mine. Mine's I'll just tell you and you say, well, mine's a 99.
Oh, you got me. Yeah. You got me.
Mine's old two-stroke.
Senior citizen right
there. That's it, man. Hey, that's it. Well, hey, we ain't all got Pathfinder money, Lionel.
Hey, I worked for that.
Right? I know you did, man. Yeah, I'm teasing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I need something like that. I got a buddy that works on my boat, and he actually suggested, he said, hey, get some of this stuff. He rattled off a different, you know, I'm sure there's knockoffs and other corrosion preventatives, but that's a good one to know about because I didn't do it and I need to. So
I need to make a video for that too, and I'll probably go out the end of the season. But it's just called Yama Shield, and it's fairly cheap, and it'll over time it'll just save you a lot of money because, you know, being on salt water, salt gets everywhere, you know, and it prevents all of that right there too. So that's something I do once a week. You know, just take the cowlings off and spray it on there.
That's a good suggestion.
And then the 100-hour service on the dot, and, you know, you should be good from there. I mean, that's about it. I try to keep my boat as clean as possible.
I'm kind of that way, too, but I've gotten more lazy as I've gotten older. Well, and, you know, part of the problem, man, is that it's the logistics of it. I blame a lot of things on my logistics, if you haven't noticed. But, like, so we drive down there in the morning. We're just going to fish one day, no overnight stuff. So we're hitting, you know, we're leaving at 4 or 5 in the morning, driving 3 hours, getting on the boat, fishing, and then driving home. So
I'm not
going to be worrying about scrubbing out that. I mean, the marina will clean the outside, flush the motor. They do the necessary stuff.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, appearance, I'll let the rain and everything else kind of handle that. And then, you know, when I bring it home for the winter, I'll give it a really thorough cleaning then. And just kind of let the season happen as it happens, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I just wash mine down every day, obviously, because I use it every day.
Yeah.
And then for me, it's more of like the professional appearance when the customers get on the boat, like the boat is clean.
Yeah.
And, you know, people feel confident and all that stuff too.
Yeah.
Then I'm a little OCD about the boat.
Yeah. I am too, man. And see, part of it for me is I'm into boating stuff, and I could talk about this for an hour, because I got this 99 model Scout flats boat from a friend, and completely restored it. I mean, like, sanded the gel coat, got back down to something shiny, and like changed the grade of sandpaper to make, you know what I mean, did the whole, I'm like, I've done so much stuff to it that I've personally done, like, not paid someone.
Right.
So I'm pretty attached to this boat just because of the sweat equity, I guess that's what I'll call it. and so it's kind of like, you know, once you do that, like,
oh, for sure,
like, you want to keep it whacked so you don't have to do that again, you know what I mean?
I want to find, yeah, I totally understand. And what you have right there, I want to find something similar to that that I could, that fits in my garage, that I could go maybe at the max two persons can fit on.
Yeah.
And do the skinny water stuff. Like, you know, when you're on a big boat all day, you want the little boat. And when you have a little boat, you want a big boat. But some days I just want to, like, take the easier route, take the smaller boat into some places in Florida. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's what I do with it. But see, I'm the opposite. Because I can do that anytime. I want to go out and do what your 26 footers.
Right,
I want
to
go run the beaches and hit the nearshore stuff, and I just can't. You know, not really.
Well, it's gonna be a good time here soon. Hopefully, I say, you know, we're approaching like the hurricane season, but these fish are gonna start. These redfish, especially, gonna start to school up really, really thick.
And you'll will you find them on the beaches or just everywhere you find redfish? They're gonna be tight.
You know,
up.
In October, they always kind of disappear from the beach. Like the end of September, October-ish, because they're getting ready to breed, and they're in these passes, you know, breeding in during the incoming tide.
Yeah.
And hopefully I'll be pretty steady on the pier on the passes, and kind of go from there.
So when does that start happening? Is there like a cool down that happens in the temperature that sort of signifies?
I know they
like...
have. I know redfish breeding is temperature based, so the water has to be a certain temperature and all that stuff. So we say September, October, but it just depends on how cool it gets, and that's about it.
Yeah. Well, it's 2020, man. And if I've learned anything, and from talking to you guys, especially about the panhandle and the weather, I mean, this year is already kind of screwy.
This year has been the weirdest fishing year I've ever experienced, and I think that goes for every guy that you've talked to, Grant to
there's definitely some weird stuff that's, you know, timing wise and things like that, like it warms up then it cools off at a time when it shouldn't, and now here we are, you know. But so, you know, who knows, it that may happen a little bit earlier, it may be November before that. I mean,
absolutely.
But that gives us something to kind of look forward to, because, I mean, frankly, right now we're in this summer pattern. So, in that summer pattern, you know, we've been talking about that for the last few weeks, and that's going to be kind of the case until it feels more like fall to us, and then that's going to, of course, translate down to the water temperature too.
Word.
Well, let me I'll tell you what. Tell the listeners how we can find you on YouTube and your website, in case we need to get down there.
Definitely check me out on the website. It's lionsailadventures.com. On YouTube, lionsailadventures.com, and I'll be right there. I got a lot of stuff coming out on YouTube that I can't wait to put out. So I kind of want to break to work on this stuff, and then I kind of don't because I need to make some money. But, check us out right there, and then we'll go slaying some fish if the weather permits.
Hey, man, awesome. Well, thank you getting the Lionel, and you know
for
what?
Sure.
I mean, look, man, it's not fishing if you don't have times like this where, you know, you're just – it's not an everyday thing in late summer. It's just something's going to come up, you know. So,
yes, sir.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Lionel, and we'll talk again next week, and hopefully weather will cooperate a little better.
Absolutely, my man.
Thanks for that update, Captain Lionel. You know, it just goes to show you that sometimes the weather can overpower even the best fishermen, and that's kind of what we're seeing a little bit of in the last week's report. I mean, you know, it's just one of those things that sometimes this weird tropical moisture blows up, and it just affects so many things, and well beyond the point of impact, so to speak. Because, I mean, in this case, it was Texas, and here we are, you know, in the panhandle of Florida, and feeling effects, at least you know, from a rain perspective and from a tide perspective. And then, of course, the fish reacted to it for reasons that we don't fully understand, I think. So, you know, it's just part of the deal in late summer. And it sounds like we're getting ready to transition into fall. And that's a good thing because fall fishing is spectacular in the Panhandle, and it's going to change on us again. You know, patterns are going to change and species are going to change, and the availability of bait and some other factors that influence kind of how we approach this deal. And it's not a bad thing. It's just going to be different. So it's something new to learn, and hopefully it'll cool down some and not be mega windy. And you know, if that's the case, then there should be some beautiful days to get out there in the coming months. And so I'm excited to hear from the gods and learn more about how they approach things. We've kind of seen what happens when the weather warms, when the weather stays warm, and now we're going to see sort of how they approach things when the weather cools down some. So it should be very interesting to see kind of where we go from here. So thanks for getting into that a little bit, Captain Lionel. Up next, we have Captain Justin Leak out of Panama City, and Captain Justin does a great job of telling us a little bit about a trip he just got back from, and we get to hear a little bit about a Western trout fishing trip, and so it's a little bit off the beaten path of Ripple Fishing Report, because typically we talk about salt in the Florida Panhandle, so we're going to hear a little bit about a trip to Utah, so that's always nice. And then we're going to get into some talk about boat electronics and what some of that stuff means, and we're going to talk about fishing in these weird circumstances of weather from Captain Justin, and he's going to talk a little bit about the fall bite that we're kind of looking forward to as well. So let's just hop right in and take it away, Captain Justin. Captain Justin Leak, how you been doing, buddy?
Good, Brad. Good. How about yourself?
Oh, good, man. We had a week off, and then you had a week off. So
that's right. You know, so, believe it or not, I do that almost every year.
Really?
Mid, late July, yep, go run up to the mountains, do a little fly fishing for some brown trout and rainbow trout, mix it up a little bit.
Yeah. So where did you head?
Well, my wife's family all lives up in the Wasatch Mountains in Utah.
Really?
Yeah, and there's a river that runs near Park City called the Provo River.
I've heard of
that.
And
that's kind of our main fishing spot.
Yeah. Does her family fish at all? Or
they do.
Oh, okay.
Her dad fly fishes a good bit, and her brother-in-law and nephew. So we got a little family crew. So I get, you know, like, I get points for doing the family stuff, and I get to fish.
Oh, that's perfect. Perfect. Everybody wins.
Yeah. And it's a little break from the heat, too. It was beautiful out there. It was cool at night, you know, warm in the day. The water temps are super cold up there in those rivers.
Yep.
High 40s, low 50s. So a little change of pace, but
yeah,
I've been back here all week, back out on the salt.
Yeah. So how was the, did you catch, you said rainbows and browns. Did you catch plenty of both, I assume?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, it's pretty spectacular. And there's no stock fish. It's all native fish.
Wow.
Wild fish. You know, during the midday, we do a little bit of nymphing, but in the kind of mid morning and late in the afternoon, especially in afternoons, it's all dry fly fishing.
Man, I think that's the way I prefer it.
Oh gosh, it's amazing.
It's
when you
so
see those
fun
fish rise and eating caddises off the surface.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my bread and butter is obviously the salt water right here in the Gulf, but I tell you what, if you've never experienced a little mountain stream trout fishing, especially if you kind of plan around some of these hatches, it's amazing. It's a lot of fun.
I've never been out west and done it. I've lived in Atlanta for a couple of years, and you know, the Chattahoochee runs right through the city, and you can catch rainbows and browns right smack dab in the middle of town.
I know that most people probably don't realize that, but right around Atlanta, just north of Atlanta, I carry a lot of people fishing. They guide up there and fish up there.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's some pretty world-class trout fishing right here in the South.
Yeah. And I tell you something, there's a few, we fished at one time, it's called Duke's Creek, but there's, and it's private water. Well, I don't know if it's private, it's regulated water.
Yeah.
And
sure,
you have to, like, they only allow like 20 people a day or something on it. And then you have to sign up, and like there has to be a spot. And anyway, we just happened to show up and say, "Hey, have you got a spot?" Because people will like reserve it and then not show up. And we got to go. And I saw the biggest brown trout I've ever seen in my life. I mean, like 24, 30 inches. I mean, it was gigantic.
Holy cow, yeah.
And the reason is they're all pellet fed. They feed them.
Yeah.
It's managed. But sure. With that said, you ain't catching them. I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, I drifted everything in my box in front of that joker, and he didn't even look at it. But it's still a thrill to see it, you know. And
you got to figure out how to hook one of those pellets on there.
I know, man. Tie up a fly that looks like a piece of pellet or something, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there's tons of places when you get into North Georgia especially. But, you know, like you said, I mean, honestly, right in the middle of Atlanta, I mean, there's some little – I'll call it a park. It's more like running trails, but there's two or three of them right in the middle of the city, and you can just park and walk right out, and you probably won't be alone. You know, there'll be other people, but it's trout in the South, so it's hard to complain.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So back to the salt.
Yeah.
You've been able to go out this week, and how have you done? Because it's been a mess.
It has been, you know, and this is typical. I'll tell you, one of the first questions I get about tarpon is when are they here? When is our season? When is our migration? And, you know, those are really loose questions because there's a tarpon around at some point pretty much all year. Now, where are their concentrations, fishable numbers, catchable numbers? You know, that's a little more complicated. You know, and that's kind of what I specialize in is trying to kind of stay on them through the summer. But what I always say is what ends our tarpon season is, for me anyways. Now, of course, we'll still catch some. We'll catch a few more. It's they're not gone. But what ends it for me is this weather event, this rain event. It happens every year. It's either late July or early August. We get this consistent rain every day. It's usually tropical in nature.
Yep.
We'll have a couple little depressions spin up, which we obviously have some stuff headed this way. Next week, you know, we had some tropical systems in the Gulf last week that moved off towards South Texas. But when these things start to spin up and we get this real heavy rain, the water gets kind of dirty, it gets really fresh, and that kind of ends it for as far as like the major migration.
Yeah.
So I actually on Monday saw a few fish, got some really good opportunities. You know, and I would assume that's pretty much the end of our main tarpon run.
Yeah.
But the good news is it kind of, believe it or not, to me signals the start of our fall patterns.
Really?
Yeah, and they hadn't really, obviously we hadn't quite got there yet. But we have a few signs.
Yeah.
Our bay water temperatures dropped about 5 degrees.
Okay.
And that's due to a lot of rainfall and the days, believe it or not, although it's odd as it can be, they're starting to get a little shorter. The nights are getting a little longer. So we'll see a consistent, slow decrease in that bay water temperature.
Okay.
And then our pilchards return. They kind of disappear in the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
The heat of the summer, which trust me, is still hot. It's hard to even think about fall or talk about cooling water temperatures because it's so hot.
Right.
But we do have some signs. I mean, that water has cooled off a little bit. And then these pilchards start showing back up in good numbers. And those pilchards will be here really till Thanksgiving. So that's a signal to me that we're kind of peaked out on our summertime stuff, and we're moving towards that more fall pattern stuff.
Okay. So I was down there this past weekend in Panama City, and the fishing was really tough for me, as you know. But
I would imagine it would be, yeah.
Yeah, super high tides, rain just in and out all day long. And really, it's a miracle we were able to fish for 2 days. You know, but I mean, we were able to kind of get out of the way of some storm. We didn't get caught in anything, so we kind of played it safe. But, you know, I wanted to ask you what your thoughts are, because we started out on a flat kind of close to the marina that we use, and just because we knew rain was coming. So we caught.
Don't want to get far.
Yeah, it's like we don't have a ton of time, so let's just get out while we can. And we caught something like 8 trout between 2 guys in that hour.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was hopping there for, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, you know, based on the last time I talked with you, I said, man, this rain's going to cool this flat off. We're going to come back out here. And so we came back out there after this rain, and it was dead. Like, crazy dead. Like, we caught 2 more fish off that same flat for the rest of the day, from, like, 4 to dark, you know.
Now, why is that? There's so many different variables there.
Yeah.
Maybe it could be, I mean, I don't know how deep you're fishing, but maybe once you get that rain, maybe those fish moved up really shallow in a foot of water.
Well, and that's, I wondered that because it was, you know, it was 2 foot maybe in the shallowest area. And there were some little bayous that, you know, I didn't want to take the time to get too far into because of the potential of, I don't want to be back there and have a storm blow up. And then here I am, you know, so.
Yeah. And that's what's fun about fishing is it's a nonstop experiment.
Yeah.
And obviously, like you're explaining, you got to experience that.
Yeah.
You had something that was working, the conditions changed, and then you tried to go back to that pattern because it was working.
Right.
And you would think like, well, our conditions are better now, so it should work better.
Right.
But maybe it was better somewhere else.
Yeah. No,
you know,
maybe I'm
fishing
sure
in a different way.
Yeah.
So it is hard to, and that's why like this never gets old to me. Every day, you know, we're out there doing the same thing you are.
Yeah.
We don't know. We have a lot of good clues. We have a lot of good experience that helps us. But when you really boil it down, every day we're trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
it changes so rapidly, man. And,
you
know, and look, we're in the hot weather. I mean, when this weather starts turning and you have like 3 days of cold and then it gets hot again, that's when it gets like super tricky.
Oh, yeah.
But,
you know, constantly change. Yeah, steady weather is always a good thing.
Yeah.
In the fishing world.
Yeah, for sure. But we also went and fished at the Hathaway Bridge because there was a ton. You know, on the first day we were there, I didn't see any bait at all.
Yeah.
On the depth finder, out on the surface, anywhere. And I said, well, that's strange, and that's sort of a red flag of something weird's happening. You know, with the crazy high tide, because in the summertime, I've never not seen bait on this bridge.
Uh-huh.
And so we didn't mess with it on Saturday, but on Sunday, we ended up going back to it, and there was a ton of bait showed up while we were there. And nothing was eating it, or nothing that we could catch was eating it. Let me say that.
Really?
Yeah. And I, you know, I don't know. And there, you know, we obviously, that's kind of a landmark place to fish in the area. So there were a ton of other boats and I didn't see anybody hooking up, but it was just weird. I said, you know, the bait's here. I mean, they just got to wait on something to come eat them, you know, and nothing ever did, at least while we were there.
Dang. And it's funny you say that because that's where we made our day today.
Yeah. Oh, I don't doubt it. I told my buddy, I said, I've never been here and not hooked a bull red. Never happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it did that day, and that's just part of it, and it's not a big deal, but it just kind of, you know, I think that I was talking to Lionel about it, and I think that that weather way over in Texas, I think the pressure changes and the rain and the tides and all this stuff just kind of messed them up a little bit, you know?
No doubt. I firmly believe that when you get these big swings in weather, you know, it seems like a lot of times before a front moves through or before the pressure drops, from one of these systems, it seems like the bite will get pretty good, and then you usually have a couple of days after where it's going to suffer.
Yeah.
You know, and then each day that it stays steady, it kind of picks back up.
Yeah.
But speaking of the bridge, you know, I mean, we filmed a show last week or weekend before last over at the Tyndall Bridge. We fished at the Hathaway Bridge today. We fished those big reds out in the pass. On some of the points in the bay, you know, really all over the bay, it's the bait is the deal. That's the consistent thing right now.
Yeah.
And like you were saying about the bait up at the Hathaway, you know, you'll see bait up there. Having good side imaging and knowing how to use it to me right now is, I mean, it's such an advantage.
Yeah.
Because
I can see that.
I tell you what, I drove by some giant masses of bait today, not on the surface at all. Never saw a bait on the surface, but I'm driving by just strictly looking at my side imaging and marking these big bait balls. And it is amazing the amount of bait that's out there right now in that bay.
Yeah.
And I guess there's so much bait that you just don't have enough fish to have every bait ball, you know, holding fish.
Yeah.
And so I drove past two or three or four different big bait balls and really wouldn't mark much at all. You'd mark a couple little things, I'd assume, ladyfish, fanish, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bluefish. But then all of a sudden you'll see a bait ball And I have some screenshots of it I'll share. But it's pretty cool. You'll see the big bait ball, and then you'll see 10 or 12 big shapes on the perimeter of it. They're never really in the bait ball. They're just kind of all around the perimeter.
Yeah.
But I really just kind of, and I'm on the trolling motor working through, just kind of watching these bait balls. And when I see those, I mean, on the screen, it gives you a distance. So I can tell, all right, out the left side right here, about, 50 feet, there's a big bait ball, and then there's some fish with it.
Yeah.
And, we'll throw swim baits and just basically blind cast and swim them through that area. And it's amazing. You'll have two or three guys casting, and usually it only takes a couple casts before somebody hooks up.
Yeah. Well, see, you're making me regret it. And because I bought a Hummingbird, just a Helix model, and I went with only the down imaging. And I debated when I bought it, and I said, do I need the side imaging? Do I want to spend the extra money? Will I use it? I'm asking myself all these questions. And I decided, you know what? It's fishing. Let's just have the depth finder and the bottom. Just read the bottom, the down imaging. You don't need to cheat too much. Just get.
Yeah.
And now I've got that installed, and I'm like.
Hey, well, you may not need to cheat too much, but I need every advantage I can get.
Well, I do. That was my way of going cheaper and not feeling bad about it. But now I feel bad about it.
Yeah.
The more I realize, I'm like, man, it would be nice to be able to see what's under this piling we're passing by.
That's exactly right. It is. Matter of fact, I would give up all sonar altogether to keep side imaging.
See, that's the kind of stuff that's making me eat my decision. I'm like, man.
That's the way it always is. Trust me. And you're not the only one. I have my entire life. I've tried to, this stuff's expensive.
Yeah.
And so you always try to shortcut a little bit when you can. And when you can justify it, but it always comes back to bite you. And in boats, I think that's probably one of the best examples of spending money on good equipment. It always pays off.
Yep.
And if it doesn't pay off by you actually using it, when you sell a boat, having high quality equipment, the best of the best, really, pays off at that point. So it's always going to come back, pay off for it.
Yeah. No, I agree. I would definitely agree with that. I didn't think I would use it.
Yeah.
And I'm realizing now I probably would use it a lot more than I realized.
Yeah. In deep water situations like that, now up on the flats and, a foot and a half, 2-3 feet of water, you don't really use it at all.
Yeah.
If we're trying to find fish, we're looking with our eyes, we're sight fishing. But really to me, once you pass 10 feet of water, that side imaging is everything.
Yeah.
Well,
if you fish,
I never believed I would use it that much, but I do.
Yeah. I've heard you talk about it a good bit, and that's what got me thinking. And I started having regrets, and I'm like, man, buyer's remorse for not buying enough.
Yeah. You may be able to just switch transducers on there.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure you can.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure all those Helix units are compatible with all their. I'll check into that for you. Remind me later.
Hey, there you go. There you go. That's why it helps to have a contact that's a pro, right? That can check into things. But yeah, it would have definitely made it a little bit easier. But what I realized was there, and I told my buddy, I said, this, we're in 30, 40 foot of water here and there's bait on top. I said, you see those birds?
Yeah.
Those that bait has no business being up on top with those birds diving on it. I said, there's something
that's
underneath
right.
there pushing them up.
Something's making them. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Because why in the world would, why would any living thing just put himself in danger? They don't.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. So we fished all that stuff, and there were some guys around us, some kayaks and some other things, and nobody caught anything. And so I don't know. It's just one of those weird things. That's why it's fishing,
Yeah.
But, that's good information. So if anybody's shopping for a new unit, go with the side imaging. Don't do like I did.
Yes, definitely, no doubt. I'll explain, this stuff's complicated. It's newer technology. Some people, like to me now, it's all pretty familiar. It's kind of like when you get your first smartphone.
Yeah.
It doesn't come with instructions, and you're thinking, how am I ever going to figure this out?
Right.
And a month later, you have 100 apps on there, and you know how to use everything.
Yep.
But I tell you, if somebody's just looking into the side imaging stuff, I think every company has it now, and they're all pretty good. The Hummingbird stuff has three different frequencies for your side imaging.
Okay.
And I really just use the highest and the lowest. So 455 is the lowest frequency.
Okay.
And what that, so you have basically, most units have 455 and 800.
Okay.
The 800 is the higher frequency. Now the Hummingbird unit has what they call mega imaging.
Yeah.
And the mega is actually even a higher frequency that basically is going to show way more detail.
So,
and that's why most of your bass guys and people that want extreme structure detail,
yeah,
want that Hummingbird unit with mega imaging. So you would think, well, why have these other frequencies if it shows this crazy detail? Well, because you have less range. The higher the frequency, the more detail you can get out of it, but you have less range with it.
Okay.
So I bounce back and forth between the mega. Like if I'm up around the bridge and I want to see every pylon and I want to look between every pylon and see every fish in there,
yeah,
I'm going to stay on that mega imaging. And I'm not going to look out.
And you can do that.
Yeah, that's right. It's super easy. You can just toggle back and forth with those two frequencies.
No, but I mean, you can on that high frequency setting, oh, you can, yeah, actually see between individual pilings and see what's there.
I can count how many redfish are sitting between the pilings.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, and again, I regret it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, trust me. Yeah. This is not a good conversation. No. Your wife will probably be mad at me.
I was going to say, she's not going to be happy. She's not going to be happy.
But so then you go, okay, well, then this low frequency 455, why would you bounce to that? Well, when I'm out in open water, when I'm out in the Gulf reef fishing, I basically stick with that 455. It's a lower frequency. It doesn't have as much detail, although it's still amazing. It's really good detail.
Yeah.
But it's not as detailed as the mega imaging, but I have a lot more range, so I can basically look out 200 feet either direction out in 80 to 100 foot of water and see every ledge, every fish, you know.
Yeah,
you can see a longer distance.
Okay,
so that the lower frequency helps when you're searching for stuff.
Yeah,
and then once you found it, you can swap to mega, and that's going to really let you look at it in closer detail.
Okay. Yeah, I've wondered, you know, I've watched some YouTube type tutorial things and stuff like that, because there are so many settings, and to be honest, my struggle is, you know, I would love to be able to walk outside right now and get this thing dialed in, but it's in Panama City. So yeah, I can't do anything. Right. You know, like I'll have to remember this, you know, next week or whenever I'm down there again. But
the good news is this is all recorded.
Hey,
so
that's it. And I have access.
So you can, you know, re-listen to your own podcast and learn some stuff.
That's it. I need to do that more often, actually, because it all bleeds together in my yeah, brain. But yeah, I wondered what all that stuff meant and why it even existed and what the differences were. So that's awesome information, because, you know, I have one and didn't know.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
You know, like, and I've tinkered with it, and I've noticed that, you know, certain settings look better than others and vice versa. And it's like, well, I don't know what I've done or why.
Yeah.
You know, I need to really just sit down and try to dive into it.
Yeah.
When I'm down there for a longer period of time, I guess. But well, man, it sounds like, the fishing is, if we can get, I'll say stable weather, because it sounds,
yeah,
like with this weird crap in Texas and the weird crap that's coming, potentially up into the Gulf, we may not have it for another few days.
Yeah,
but
yeah, and I wouldn't let it discourage you too much, especially people. Now, if you're trying to plan a trip, you know, it can put a kink in your plans a little bit. But I wouldn't let it discourage you too much, because we face this every day right now, where we wake up, we look at the radar, oh my gosh, it's storming. You know, most people let that kill their day. And if you're flexible like we are, you know, when you find a window, no, be smart about it. You know, if you have a tiny window between big storm systems, it might not be safe.
Yeah.
But if you find a safe window like we did today, you know, it, a lot of times I discover new things this time of year.
Yeah.
Because it puts me outside my comfort zone. It puts me outside my normal routine. And I go, okay, I can't go catch bait at daylight like I did, you know, yesterday, like I have for the past 6 months.
Right.
So it makes me try different things, do different things. Like today, we did a lot of swim bait fishing with that DOA bait buster.
Yep.
And which the gold and black back was our go-to.
Okay.
But, you know, something in that dark, tannic kind of water is going to really put off some contrast, some flash. But it puts you outside your comfort zone. And even if you didn't have any success and or catch anything. I shouldn't say success. Even if you didn't catch anything, when you find these little windows, try new stuff. Sometimes you kind of X off some things that, you know, you wanted to try. And a lot of times, if you try a few new things, you find something that works.
Yeah, absolutely. And I tell you something, the way I approach this whole deal, if I can get down there and just attempt to put something in the boat, I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't care. Right. I could care less if I catch anything. Now, what bothers me the most is I usually don't go alone. So I'm taking a buddy that's never caught a bull red, or I'm taking a buddy that's never jumped a tarpon, and it's like, you got to do this. You got to see why I get so fired up, and I take them. Then it's like, oh yeah, we caught some trout and a couple ladyfish. So, but I mean, that's when I feel like, oh man, we got to do it again and try to, you know. But I still enjoy just being out there because there's just something to experience. And even like you said, let's say nothing special happens at all, which is rare if you're out and you're looking.
Yeah.
You're still going to learn something about the fishery that's going to help you later. You know, so it's never a bad day.
No.
But there's been better days, let's say that.
We only get to, you know, catching fish consistently by spending hundreds or if not thousands of days on the water not catching fish.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, Justin, the whole concept of this podcast is to close that gap between a guy me and a guy like you.
Yeah, and you know, people like me that kind of learned it ourselves and taught ourselves and went through that process, we like to share it. And I think that's why a lot of people want to do this, because, you know, I wish I could have had something like this. And I put a lot of that legwork in. Why not help other people with it? You know, if I can save somebody a few steps in the process, then hey.
There you go, man. Yeah, and thank you for it, because I know it's benefited me. Look, and if nothing else, even at times when it doesn't work, you know, like I'm on this flat telling my buddy, hey, this rain's going to help us.
You know,
he's like, wow, this Brad really knows what he's talking about with this stuff. Now, it doesn't pan out, you know, so I have to eat my words, but it sounds great, you know, just
gives you a little confidence.
Yeah, weekend fisherman. I'm up there, you know, spouting off all this scientific stuff about why we're going to catch them after the rain.
Well, hey, and then you just make up something else.
That's it.
The pressure must have dropped too much after that rain.
Yeah. Well, I told him, I said, man, there's, you know, at the marina, the high tide was touching the bottom of the piers. And I said, this is not normal. So something weird's happening. So all bets are off for anything that we, you know, might've planned for, you know, well, awesome, man. Well, tell the listeners how they can find you if they want to book a trip down in Panama City.
Yeah, super easy. You can go to our website. It's PanamaCityInshore.com. We have a list of all our guides on there. Kind of explains what everybody does. And you can give me a shout on my cell phone. It's listed on there. My cell number is. Or, you know, if I'm busy or you see a guide that you want to hook up with and go fish, you can just call them direct. Everybody's contact info is right there on our website.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for talking with us, and hopefully this next system that's kind of rolling up from the Caribbean will go the other direction and leave us alone in the Gulf for a few weeks, and maybe it'll kind of settle back down, you know?
I'm with you. I think we deserve a break.
I think so. I think because of all of the year of 2020, I think we deserve a break from now
on. Yeah, I think the whole world does.
Exactly. Well, awesome, buddy. Well, thank you, and we'll talk again next week.
All right, sounds good, Brad.
Thank you for that update, Captain Justin. And you know, man, it's weird how, you know, it's so hot out and it doesn't feel like anything's happening. But Justin pointed out some things that are happening that that maybe us humans on land don't recognize. And we are slowly transitioning into fall. I mean, you know, if you think of the seasons as kind of peaks and then valleys, you know, once we peak in summer, we begin that trek down into the fall, and the temperatures drop and the day, you know, days are shorter, and it's just a different process to catch fish and chase fish in the panhandle. But you know, it fascinates me that has already happened, and here we are the end of July, and we're already kind of walking down that path into the fall weather. It's a process, you know, it's a natural process that we all just get to witness and then react to. And as fishermen, you know, our reaction to the natural processes is what determines if we catch fish or if we have success in our time on the water. And so hopefully, you know, knowledge that, that guys like Captain Justin and Captain Brandt and Captain Lionel share with us, sort of, like Justin and I mentioned, sort of bridge the gap between the recreational weekend warrior type fishermen and these guys that are pros that are out there, you know, as often as they can be. And, you know, this sort of speeds up that process, and that's the ultimate goal. So that's a wrap for our 20th episode in 2020. And hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you'll subscribe and tell a friend, and that way you don't miss an episode, because as you know, there's always something to learn because the conditions are forever changing, and our guides do a great job of keeping us in the loop of what they know and sharing their information of their areas. So that's a real special thing. So I hope you take away some of the same knowledge I take away from it. So I hope you'll join us next week. We got some great things coming up, and hope we hear from you then.